Yes.
Welcome
ahead,
to today's eMeasure Learning Collaborative Conference. Today's call is being recorded. Please stand by.
Good morning. This is Floyd Eisenberg, Senior Vice President of Health Information Technology here at National Quality Forum, and I welcome you all to what I think will be a very exciting day, our eMeasure Learning Collaborative in-person meeting. I am very excited for the day. I look at, it seems to be a who's who of folks in quality management and electronic health records. And I welcome those in the room as well as those who are on the phone and on the web. We look for an exciting day. We'll be describing not only the initial kickoff in the morning, but there are 5 breakouts you'll hear more about later in the day, and we'll give you all the logistics for that as we go. So as we go through the day, we will hear from our chair of the Health Information Technology Advisory Committee for NQF, our high-tech committee, Paul Tang. We will then hear from a keynote. We're going to have a little switch in order from Kate Goodrich from CMS, as well as then Farzad Mastashari, who I don't think needs an introduction, but I do understand in Washington we always give introductions. Then we'll give you some instructions for your breakout. So I think it'll be an exciting morning and afternoon. Just a bit about what is the eMeasure Learning Collaborative. It is a public initiative open to everyone, convened by NQF with HHS funding in order to bring together diverse stakeholders to talk about e-measurement. We've all been in the process of looking at e-measures being used in meaningful use stage 1, proposed for meaningful use stage 2, and we want to look at what are some of the best practices, identify what are some of the key success factors that are happening in order to make this work and to move this forward. Because the whole purpose is to unobtrusively get data that's there from routine clinical practice to be able to evaluate performance and improvement in outcomes. That's where we're headed. So what you'll be seeing what the deliverables of this effort are to identify those best practices, identify gap areas that need to be fixed soonest, and even some that need to be fixed later, but especially soonest, and develop recommendations for the future to expand and resolve the gaps. So as you go through, and you'll hear this again later, your breakouts, in each area, what are the best practice examples? What are some of the key success factors you hear, and what are the common themes in order to make sure that others can reuse those in implementing measurement and evaluation? What are the mechanisms to enhance data flow and workflow capability? What are the recommendations for future health IT, and how can we rethink how we do all this so that it works and that we really can improve outcomes, improve care, decrease costs, everything the national quality strategy is moving toward. So I want to thank, I'm not going to read all of these names, but I want to thank all of the planning group members. They've been working really hard and are very excited, and I think almost all of them are here today. And I think they've planned a very good day for you, and we look for continued work by this group. So I thank them all. What I want to do is introduce the chair of our high-tech committee, Paul Tang, who I think many of you know. He has quite a history in health IT, and I think many of you are aware he also co-chairs the HIT Policy Committee, the Federal Advisory Committee. So we look forward to his comments, inviting you to the collaborative. So, Paul?
Yep. Thank you, Floyd.
And welcome to everybody. And I'm just sorry I couldn't be there. I'm very excited about the fact that NQF is hosting and HHS is funding this forum of stakeholders in the entire quality measurement space. So Floyd asked me to say a few words from the perspective of NQF's HIT Advisory Committee. This is extremely important activity at a very important moment in time. I think we all agree about that. And I think the stakeholders in this room and on the phone are just the stakeholders that can make a difference in measuring and improving the improving the quality of health and healthcare in America. The healthcare industry, which is supported, I think, by some very innovative federal initiatives, is going through a fundamental transformation. And I think it'll move us away from this dysfunctional reimbursement system, and I think we all agree with that, that we have, and one is based on a more rational goal of improving performance and outcomes. To do that, though, I think developing a robust quality measurement system upon which we build a performance-based system is the motivation for today's meeting, and the important part is the ongoing collaboration in this e-measure space. I think in some circles, such as the work that Don Berwick did at IHI and continued in CMS, has always been pursuing the triple aim, better health and better care for an affordable cost. But we've always been tethered to our paper-based information system that really left us overly reliant on administrative and claims-based quality measures. And to people that are familiar with the reliability of these data, it's frankly not surprising that neither providers nor patients trusted the data or made choices based on those reported measures. So I think with the successful EHR incentive program in place, led by ONC and CMS, who we're going to hear from, I think our data desert is hopefully coming to an end. But the data that make up the water in this desert is only going to be as drinkable and sustaining as the effort we take to assure its purity and nutritional value. So ideally, sort of like as is shown in this diagram that Floyd is showing, the data would be used throughout the entire quality measurement supply chain. It would stretch from the outcomes data used in randomized controlled clinical trials to the specifications in clinical guidelines, to the data triggers that evoke clinical decision support during CPOE, to the functional outcomes reported by patients, to the definitions, and finally to the definitions of publicly reported outcomes. In that ideal world, as sort of NQF and the members that have been participating and many of the committees at the national level that work in the quality measurement space, The reference to data and the derivative measures would all point to some common data model, so we'd have a lingua franca to deal with. So the NQF's quality data model, or QDM, is an example, I think, of an evolving national resource that could potentially play that sort of linkage role. And NQF has also developed, you probably know, its first version of the measure authoring tool, and that would help convert the measure concepts in the QDM into e-measures that would be consumed by EHRs. So both the QDM and the measure authoring tool, I think, will play important roles in a quality measurement, maybe platform, that can be leveraged across the entire quality measurement supply chain. So I think this meeting's all about having all of us, the relevant stakeholders in this quality measurement enterprise, collaborating and sharing best practices, Floyd mentioned, to build the quality data model and the quality measurement platform upon which future quality measures will be defined, collected, analyzed, reported, and ultimately paid upon. So I think certainly we're looking forward to the outcomes of today's kickoff meeting and really enjoy the fact that we're going to have an ongoing collaboration involving everybody in this quality measurement enterprise. So on behalf of sort of the NQF, HIT Advisory Committee, we're really excited about this collaboration, and we're anxious to help in any way we can. So thank you, Floyd.
Thank you very much, Paul. As Paul stated, we really look forward to a lot of good output from this group to help move this whole process forward. As he had indicated. So what we're going to do is have a little bit of change in order. We're going to start with Dr. Kate Goodrich presenting from the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Kate is a senior technical advisor to the director of the Office of Clinical Standards and Quality and chief medical officer for CMS. She also provides leadership in quality measurement, oversees HHS-wide efforts to align measures across programs, and is also CMS liaison with National Quality Forum, and we've had a very terrific relationship about how to move all this forward. She's terrific to work with. Plus, she continues to practice, I don't know how she does all this, as a hospitalist at George Washington University Hospital and as a clinical assistant professor of medicine. So I welcome Kate. And
can you hear now? Okay. So I was just saying. I was working closely with Floyd and the rest of the NQF team at the time that the idea for this collaborative came around, so it's really wonderful to see it come to fruition. My job for today is really to give you context for, at a fairly high level, for how at CMS and even more broadly at HHS, although most of my remarks are about CMS, are thinking about our measurement policies, what our measurement strategy is going to be, particularly with the passage of the Affordable Care Act and the development of the National Quality Strategy. That's really afforded us an opportunity to really think through what our strategy is going to be in the context of the National Quality Strategy, and I'll talk about that a little bit. So I think as you all go forward with your discussions throughout the day, I'm hoping that you'll keep what I talk about in mind in terms of our sort of high-level principles about measurement. I'll also talk a little bit about measure alignment, which I think is really a critical component of what we're doing at CMS and across HHS. And while most of my remarks are not specific to e-measures, they are about all of our programs, of which, of course, high-tech and meaningful use are a very, very integral part. And, of course, we think, you know, going forward, we'll be moving more and more into the e-measure space. So I think what I'm going to say is applicable to certainly all of our programs. So many of you are very familiar with the three-part aim. So this, the reason I have this slide is just to point out that for us at CMS and I think for all quality components of HHS, the three-part aim is really what drives us. I would say that pretty much everything that we do at CMS and certainly within the Office of Clinical Standards and Quality just every day comes back to the three-part aims. And we certainly have Don Berwick to thank for that, as mentioned earlier, and his influence was tremendous in our organization. So this is how we think about everything we do every day: better health for the population, better care for individuals, and lower cost through improvement. And I think over time you will see that all of our measurement activities address this three-part aim. We hope they do now, but we think we can certainly even improve upon that. So Section 3011 of the Affordable Care Act asked the Secretary to create a national quality strategy. I imagine everyone in here is fairly familiar with this. The national quality strategy adopted the three-part aim and also identified six priorities for the nation. And I do want to emphasize this is a national quality strategy. This is not a federal quality strategy. And so we've seen really, I think, great interest in this. A lot of buy-in to what we came up with here, and I say this happened with tremendous input from the private sector as well, with NQF convening the National Priorities Partnership and all of the public comments that we received. So there's six priorities: making care safer, patient and family engagement, effective communication and coordination of care, promoting the most effective prevention and treatment practices, starting with cardiovascular disease, and the Million Hearts campaign that you all may be familiar with is a big part of that. Working with communities to promote the wide use of best practices to enable healthy living, and finally, of course, importantly, making quality of care more affordable for all. This is just a slide to outline to you all of our reporting programs at CMS. There's a lot of them. We have sort of divided them up into these buckets here, although I suppose you could divide them up in other ways as well. So we have as many hospital quality reporting programs, physician quality reporting, post-acute care quality reporting programs, payment model reporting. So there it's the Medicare Shared Savings Program, ACOs, hospital value-based purchasing, and then population quality reporting, which we've under that bucket, we've put the Medicaid adult and CHIPRA quality reporting programs. The health insurance exchanges are going to have a quality reporting component to them as outlined by the law, and then Medicare Part C and D. So we have a number of programs, and I think one theme that you all should be aware of, and I'm sure you are, is that, you know, one of the other things that the law afforded us was the ability to really start substantively moving from quality reporting programs into a value-based purchasing construct. So we now, and that's important for our, how we are thinking about measurement. So we now have an, well, we had our first program for value-based purchasing was end-stage renal disease, quality improvement program. We, of course, also have the hospital value-based purchasing program, and soon to come is the physician value modifier. And the law also required an analysis of post-acute care value-based purchasing programs with reports to Congress. But we do not have the authority to implement those at this time. So I want to talk a little bit about an activity that's been underway for almost a year now at CMS that's really critical to our overall measurement strategy. So we call this group the Quality Measures Task Force, and its charge is to develop recommendations on CMS measure implementation. Really, the initial goal of this group, and I think I would say the primary goal of this group, has been to align measures across all of our programs. But I would say it's also to, and has very actively been working to, align measurement policies across CMS. The goal is very much to avoid duplication of effort, which I think no one here would argue we've definitely seen over the years. So we are establishing and operationalizing policies for program-specific as well as CMS-wide measure implementation and development. I'll give you an example of some of our achievements there already. We're aligning and prioritizing measures. We are coordinating the development of new measures across CMS, and then, again, coordinating measure implementation, development, and policies with external HHS agencies. And at the very end, I'll talk about a new group at HHS that is really trying to do much of the same type of work we're doing within CMS, but across the entire department. So this is made up of senior representatives from across CMS, and I don't know if there's a, oh yes, there we go. So here you can see who's involved. It's run out of our office at OCSQ, but involves the folks from Medicaid and CHIP, the Part C and D folks, the SIO, the Innovation Center. MMCO is the new name for the Dual Eligibles Office. I think it's the Medicare-Medicaid Coordination Office. Lots of acronyms. So basically what we've been doing so far, what we've really been focused on, is trying to go measure by measure for each of our programs as we are writing our rules, as we go through our rulemaking cycle. So with the express purpose not only of analyzing, you know, should a measure be in or out, and this is with tremendous input from the Measures Application Partnership as well, but also do our measures align with one another. And I will just say, don't expect that by next year it's all the same measures and all the same programs. It takes a long time to do this. This is incredibly hard work, but we clearly are making progress on this, which is really exciting. So we also explicitly review the MAP input on each of the measures that we review. Now, not all the measures from every program went to the MAP this past year. For example, the Medicaid measures were not considered by the MAP. So we're thinking about incorporating that for future years. But for this past year, it was primarily the, I think it's the Title VIII programs, which is most of the Medicare programs. Alignment of measures is a forced function, so we try to make sure that that occurs. And at this point, it's probably more at the measure concept level, although certainly in many instances, it's at the actual measure level. Sample accomplishments are alignment of quality dimensions across CMS programs. In my next slide, I'll talk more about that. We felt that this was really key, a key first step to being able to actually align measures, is to come to consensus about what the dimensions of measurement should be. We also have developed measure selection, removal, and retirement criteria that we plan to implement across all of our programs. We have been collaborating with ONC very closely on a day-to-day basis on the Stage 2 rule, and the QMTF has been, members of the QMTF have been very involved with that. And then finally, we also not only want to align and prioritize measures across our programs, but also many of our national initiatives, the two primary ones being Partnership for Patients and Million Hearts. So this is what we affectionately call our bubble slide. This is a representation of the six domains that we are going to be implementing for all of our programs. And you will see they look very familiar because they map really directly to the National Quality Strategy. So So they include clinical care, care coordination, population and community health, efficiency and cost reduction, safety, and person and caregiver-centered experience and outcomes. With all of these domains, we feel that measures, we should be driving towards measures that are patient-centered and outcome-oriented, particularly as we move into a value-based construct. We feel like outcome measures are more important. Lord knows we have a plethora of process measures. Some of those, I think, are still important for us to use, but we really need to be moving much more towards outcomes-based measures. We also recognize that we have a lot of gaps. And I would say we have a lot of gaps, particularly in the five gray ones here. So I think one of the things that we are also explicitly talking about, not just internal to HHS, but also with our private partners and other stakeholders, is how can we work over the next several years to fill key gaps within those areas. And our work with NQF and with the MAP has been and will continue to be instrumental in figuring out how to actually go about doing that. You will see there are a number of subdomains listed here. Those are sample subdomains. I don't want people to walk away from here saying these are definitely the CMS subdomains, because that is an activity that we're undertaking right now, is to identify which concepts go under which domain. And this is important because for some of our value-based purchasing programs, we score providers based upon their performance within a particular domain. So what goes under which domain actually really matters. And we know that there are some measure concepts out there, or measures out there, that could potentially fall under more than one domain, so we have to figure out how to deal with that. And we also feel like all of the measure concepts in each of these domains are common across providers, with the exception, you know, of clinical care. There's obviously specific measures for specific types of providers. And we hope that over time, our goal is to get to a place where in all of our programs that we have core sets of measures that cross all of these domains. We're definitely not there yet because of the problem that we have with measure gaps, but that is our goal. And we think that having measures in all of these domains, again, on an outcomes level, is going to be what would drive the ability to actually implement and realize the goals of the National Quality Strategy. We feel that quality can be measured and improved at multiple levels. Right now, most of our programs measure at the individual physician or practice setting, so hospital, physician group, post-acute care center, what have you. We think that's still important, but we think in order to, again, achieve the three aims of the National Quality Strategy, that really we need to be measuring at all of these levels, including the community level. We're obviously much farther away from being able to do that consistently across all of our programs, but that is the goal. Again, we would like to have patient-centric, outcomes-oriented measures, and we believe that measure concepts should roll up, which will allow, or cascade is a word that we hear a lot with the MAP, having cascading sets of measures. That will help us to align quality improvement objectives at all of these levels. So just a couple of slides that on just sort of high-level principles for us related to performance measurement. Again, we want to align our measures with the National Quality Strategy in the six domains, implement measures where we know that we have measure gaps, and working hard to select the development of measures that matter. And I think that's going to be a really important concept for this group, is to be thinking through that, and we'll be looking for your guidance and other organizations' guidance on that. Again, align measures across programs. Leverage opportunities to align with the private sector. This is really a focus for us for this upcoming year with the work of the Measures Application Partnership, is to really, you know, I think get our hands dirty and really figure out how do we actually align with the private sector. That is a very high priority for us. We know it's a high priority for the private sector as well. I think we'll get there. It's going to take a lot of hard work. And then again, a common theme, I've said it four or five times already, focus on patient-centered measures and patient outcomes. You know, we hear a lot from providers that we have too many measures, and we would agree. We have a very large portfolio of measures. I think even the NQF portfolio of measures is probably approaching close to 1,000. So it's a lot of measures out there. And we hear from our stakeholders, and we do believe that we need within our programs to have very parsimonious sets of measures that matter. This is important also for developing core sets of measures and measure concepts. There are going to be some of our programs, though, and we have to balance this, where having a fairly large, diverse set of measures is really important. So, for example, in the PQRS program and for the Physician Value Modifier coming up, there's many specialties out there. There's some specialties out there for whom we really don't have really even any measures or very good measures. So we need to balance that goal of parsimony with having enough measures within certain programs to address all of our specialties out there. We would like to, the other thing that we've been very focused on is removing measures from our programs that are no longer appropriate. So as I said before, we've developed measure removal criteria. An example of that would be measures that are topped out. And overall, the goal of our program is to maximize improvement in quality and minimize provider burden. So since this is the e-measure learning collaborative, I figured I had to have at least one or two slides on electronic specifications. So just a couple, again, of high-level concepts here. Our goals are to develop de novo measures that capitalize on the data captured in EHRs, to provide very clear interpretation and understanding of the specification for vendors and providers. I think this is something that we can definitely continue to improve on, but that is certainly something we're very focused on, and then work towards continued standardization of e-measures to meet the needs of multiple programs. And I think this is going to be somewhat of a challenge given the diversity of all of our different programs, but I think we have to do that. So next steps in e-measures and reporting. So Floyd referenced the measure authoring tool, and as did Dr. Tang, and also the QDM. These will continue to evolve over time. I don't know how many of you are familiar with our CMS Measure Manager Blueprint. It's basically a very detailed step-by-step for e-measure specification, e-measure development. This has been updated to include the HQMF DSTU, and as that continues to evolve, we will continue to incorporate that. One of the ways that has continued to evolve is through our e-measures issues group, which some of you may have been involved with. Floyd has been very, very involved with this for us. This is something that was started at CMS, I don't know, maybe a year ago now, I'm not sure, something like that, which is a forum for members of various federal agencies, primarily CMS and ONC, but we've had other participation as well, measure developers, contractors, again, as I said, Floyd has been super involved in this, to work through e-measure standardization and related issues. So some of the enhancements that we'll see to the HQMF have come from multiple discussions through this group. Anybody's invited to come if anybody wants to. It's, I think, been a really, really very, very successful group, very fruitful discussions. Obviously, alignment of the EHR incentive program with other CMS initiatives. We are, you know, the law says that we have to align meaningful use with PQRS, and I think going over time we need to continue as we develop more e-measures and have and use electronic health records more in other settings for capturing clinical quality data, that we'll need to continue to do that as well. We will be pilot testing transmission specifications. And then finally, over time, the goal is to integrate the e-measure with other HIT functions, such as clinical decision support. So I referenced earlier the sort of HHS-wide effort that is sort of a parallel to the Quality Measures Task Force that we have at CMS. So this is a new group called the HHS Measurement Policy Council. This is co-led by myself and Nancy Wilson from AHRQ. We have participation from pretty much every agency that touches quality measures. So this is really focused on measure alignment across the department, but I would emphasize this is not just about alignment of measures. And one of the discussions that we've been having recently, actually at our latest meeting, we had a terrific discussion about how much alignment is enough alignment. Because when you start, as I've said before, when you start sort of peeling back the layers of the onion of alignment, it is just unbelievably challenging. But it's also a tremendous opportunity. So I think we need to make a decision within, across certain programs, again, how much alignment is the right amount. We don't want to let the perfect be the enemy of the good, but we want to get as far as we can in order to reduce burden on providers and have sort of a coordinated national approach to measurement. So we have been tasked with by the Secretary's office with aligning and prioritizing measures in about six areas, but we're starting off with patient safety and cardiovascular disease, mainly because of the two large initiatives that we have, Partnership for Patients and Million Hearts. So that work has started over just the past few weeks. And the good news is as we start peeling back those layers, we see that this is definitely possible. It's going to take some time, but it's definitely possible. It'll be a stepwise approach, I think. And then I think also very importantly for this group is that besides just alignment, plain alignment of measures, I think it's important for HHS to establish and operationalize policies, measurement policies related to measure implementation and measure development, getting back to that trying to reduce measure burden, trying to reduce duplication of effort. So we will be tackling some of those thorny and difficult issues over the next year. It's a very exciting opportunity, I think. So I hope that this has given you a sense of what where we're headed at CMS and at HHS more broadly. Again, I think this provides sort of a good context for you as you start your deliberations and discussions today. We will be very eagerly be looking to you and to see what comes out of this collaborative, and I'm just very excited that this is happening. So thank you very much. And I'm happy to take any questions, although if they're detailed e-specification questions, then I have to look at Farzad and get him to answer for me. Any questions?
Okay. Good.
So, thank you very much, Kate. I'm Dr. Goodrich. I really appreciate, and I'm sure everyone else appreciated the direction in which CMS is headed. So this is very helpful to the group. And I want to introduce our next speaker, who probably goes without introduction, but I'll introduce him anyway. I have to say my first introduction to Dr. Mastashari was when I was working in HITSPE with one of the leads of the Public Health Data Standards Consortium, who speaks with a Russian accent. So every time I hear Farzad's name, I hear it in Russian in my head. So anyway, let me just give a bit of an introduction. Obviously, many of you are aware, Dr. Mastashari is the National Coordinator for Health IT and runs the office of the ONC. He did a lot of work there in the past and recently became coordinator. You're the fourth national coordinator. Do I have the number right? Also previously worked at New York City Department of Health and Mental Hygiene as assistant commissioner with some key projects leading CDC-funded New York Center of Excellence in Public Health Informatics and an AHRQ quality-funded project on quality measurement at the point of care. So you have a lot of experience working with vendors to get data for public health and reporting. So we look forward to his comments. Welcome.
Thank you. I don't think I have any slides, so I'm just gonna talk. It's that interesting hearing the introduction and remembering the HITSPE days and remembering the days of leading this initiative about quality measurement at the point of care. And this was about 5 years ago. 5 years ago. And I'm sure many of you have been doing this a lot longer than that, thinking about how do we use electronic health records to measure quality, continuously, to measure quality as a tool for improvement, not for accounting. And it seemed 5 years ago so close. Oh, there's just a few things we're going to do. We just need a common information model and a universal query language. And we just need to get the plans on board to pay for EHR-generated quality measures. Oh, and we're going to drop these quality measures into these different electronic health records that are commercially available. We'll do it in the course of a 2-year ARC-funded research project. How many of you have gotten grants like that? And it is sometimes discouraging when we look at all that youthful or naive optimism that we can change systems, big systems, $3 trillion systems, through individual action in spots throughout the country, that we can turn quality measurement, this big engine that's venerated precedence, and we can just change it. And many of us have learned painful lessons about just how damn hard it is to change systems when you're only holding one part of it. When the system resists, when the system has six heads, trying to change practice without changing payment, trying to change payment without having the information tools and the delivery systems to be able to carry that. But the good news is that we are now perhaps uniquely at a time and a place where the pieces, where those strands are actually coming together. And I don't think this is more youthful optimism, because I'm not so young anymore. I actually feel like it's going to happen, that it's happening now. And it's not going to be this year. Okay, it's not going to be this year. But it's not going to be 10 years from now either. That the pieces are falling into place. So let me review a little bit what were all the problems that we faced and why do I feel optimistic? One of the things we were trying to propose, right, that payment be based on quality measures derived out of electronic health records and that those quality measures be the same measures that providers see and use and own as part of their own practices, part of their own medical records. That there isn't two concepts of quality measurement going on. One that you do for improvement and one that is done unto you for payment. That's, right? That's the idea. So what we're, first of all, how many of you here in the room, and I think we have a few people online, who we can't poll readily, right? But how many of you in the room here have ever actually generated a quality measure out of your electronic, your or somebody else's electronic health record? Raise your hand. Right? It can be done. How many of you, keep your hands up, how many of you have ever been paid on the basis of those quality measures? I see a little bit maybe. One person who answers, two people have their finger defiantly up in the air. So what's the problem? And let's take a second to think about this. Because of high tech, because of meaningful use, and note about this, when Congress wrote the passage that said there will be meaningful people who get paid for meaningful use of electronic health records, they didn't micromanage what meaningful use should be. Thank God. But they said meaningful use has got to include only three things that they said including. And one of them was quality measurement. I think that was a pretty important signal about how important it is that electronic health records carry with them quality measurement. Now, one of the problems we had back in the day was health plans would say, well, listen, I can't pay differently for EHR-generated quality measures, which even if everything was perfect, I could only get from 10 or 15 or 20% of all the providers, right? We have to have our systems that are based on claims data because we get that from everybody. And they would say, you know, it's going to be a long time before most of the people who are in my network are going to be able to generate these quality measures. What? That's changing. We went from 20%, 17%, however you want to measure it, right? Doubled, tripled in the past 2-3 years. By the end of this year, the majority of healthcare delivered in this country will be delivered with electronic health records that are certified. Period. We will have tipped the scale here. So that's piece one. That's happening. That's a massive trend. And it's a thought that 2, 3, 4 years from now, 2016, where are we going to be then? It's going to be the rare provider who doesn't have an electronic health record. Are we still going to be doing chart reviews? Are we? Really? I see some people saying, yeah.
We're still going to be doing chart reviews.
Let me put it another way. What do we have to do so we don't have to keep doing chart reviews? You have an electronic health record that captures, as a consequence of care, all the data, the blood pressures and the diagnoses and the smoking statuses and the medications, and we're still going to do chart reviews on a sample of the patients to generate a quality measure for accounting purposes that actually doesn't help me in my practice today figure out who doesn't meet the criteria so that I can improve care? Are we still going to be doing sampling, not census? So what do we have to do to get to that point? And I think the way we approach, at ONC, approach challenges is to think about some of the principles for action. And I'm going to tie each of those 5+1 principles to what I think are the priority things that we need to do to get there. Our first principle is open, inclusive processes. And that's what this is, right? We're not going to be able to solve a problem on our own. We're not smart enough. And I remember being on the outside, feeling like I had something to add here to the national conversation, and there was no way in. There was no way to take the work that I had done, that I thought was really important, and get that heard. And we need those bright lights, and we need the perspective, and we need the advice, and we need the collaboration, because we can't do it alone. We're not smart enough, and we don't have enough money. So that's what this is. The goal of today is to find people who have done it, who understand deeply what it takes, and not just the challenges, but how to overcome those challenges, and to use our inpatient convening role to accelerate consensus, accelerate belief that we can change. That's principle one. Principle two is eye on the prize. Eye on the prize generally means having a very crisp, clear view of what is the future that we're trying to get to, that North Star that we align to. And doing everything with our eye on that ultimate prize. And the picture that I started with of a world where people not only have electronic health records, but that quality measurement comes out as a natural consequence of the care processes, that those quality measures are used for improvement purposes, that every second, as every provider sits down next to a patient, they know how well they're doing, what this patient needs, that decision support is linked to quality measurement, that population health management, and there's a lot of talk of population health management today, that population health management is integrally linked to quality measurement. That's the vision. But it also means something else in this context. Eye on the prize also means focusing on what matters. And when Kate talks about the six domains of the National Quality Strategy, when she talks about prioritization, when she talks about Million Hearts and Partnership for Patients, that's eye on the prize. That says, you know what? We can't do everything. Providers can't do everything. We can't focus on 140 issues at the same time. We need a focus. We need prioritization. We need to say, start here, based on some principles. We need some parsimony. Why is parsimony never valued? So, Eye on the Prize says, you start with questions like, what kills the most people that we can improve to save more premature deaths? Start there, right? I think we can get providers and health plans and purchasers and payers and governments behind the concept that maybe we shouldn't kill people. That maybe, partnership with patients, that maybe the goal of healthcare should be to get some help. And it's astounding how few quality measures we have that actually get at those domains of the National Quality Strategy. Because we took our eye off the ball. Because as we were developing thousands of measures, we didn't ask the question, what is the single most important measure if we're going to be trying to impact care coordination? It's not just looking under the street lamp where we had data. It's not just that. I fault us for keep getting our eye off the ball, our off the prize. If we look at safety, outpatient context, what's probably the single most important thing that we could do? Outpatient safety is probably medication-related, right? Medication-related. What's the measure we have? Inappropriate drugs for the elderly. What percent of all ED visits among the elderly are due to those 100-plus medications? What percent? It's an important question, isn't it? If we're thinking about outcomes, I was talking to a colleague at CDC about doing surveillance for adverse drug events, and he said, well, the kinds of stuff that you guys are doing, I don't think we'd see it in the data about ED visits. And I thought to myself, what was a four-letter word? All right, we should start there and say if we want to see an impact in the big picture surveillance numbers for ED visits for the elderly, what should we be measuring and moving? And what is it? There's one cause for 33% of all ED visits among the elderly to emergency rooms from adverse drug events. 33% for this one cause, 3% for all the other inappropriate drugs for the elderly. 3%. We do a great job on that measure. We've reduced ED visits among the elderly by 3%, max. But there's this other thing that accounts for 33%, and you all know it. What is it? What is it? Well, it's one medication I'm thinking of. Coumadin. Medical management Coumadin. Is the INR in range? Where's the quality measure for that? Where is it? There is not an NQF-endorsed measure for appropriate dosing of Coumadin. Not one. Or insulin, number two cause, hypoglycemic. And it's doable, right? We have an electronic health record that captures your medication. It captures the INR. It's the INR. It's normalized. That's what the N means, normalized. Right? So we took our eye off the prize. And we do the same thing, go down the list. Care coordination. Did you close the referral loop? I can't tell you how frustrated I am when we hear about, well, this measure's not appropriate for me. And if you give a referral, if you get a referral, did you close the loop? Is there room for improvement in this measure? How often do we close the referral loop? How often in this country? Flip a coin, 50%. Half the time. Half the time. There's room for improvement. Right? Do we have a measure for closing the referral loop? Do we? No. We don't. Do we have 1,500 other endorsed measures? We got those. But we took our eye off the prize. So when Kate talks about developing measures, priority, de novo measure development, that's what we have to go after. That's what we're going after. And actually, you know what? Turns out someone did develop a quality measure right out of an electronic health record for Coumadin. The VA. There's one citizen who's done it. They've actually done it. They've done it, and they're doing it, and it works. And they're rolling it out to other people. They just never thought, well, anyone cared to move it out into the broader indoor space. So sometimes it's not doing it de novo. It's taking something that already works that someone like you has been working on. And if you look at what you've put into electronic health records and it addresses core areas where we have gaps, like care coordination, like patient safety, like patient-centeredness, we need to hear about those. It's part of this process. So eye on the prize. Principle 3, feet on the ground, which says we got to keep 1 foot where we are today. Not 2 feet. Not stay where we are today. But keep 1 foot where we are today and step forward based on where we are today. Live in the real world, which means incrementalism. But let's be bold about the incrementalism. Sometimes you need to pivot. Pivot means you keep 1 foot down and you move directions, but you know where you're trying to go. So building on what exists today, not assuming that we're going to have a clean sheet of paper and we're going to sketch out the ideal healthcare system of the future and we're just going to get there directly. No, we have to build on what we have today, step by step, but let's be bold about it. Principle 4, use the market. Use the market. And, you know, I hear a lot of the National Coordinator for Health IT, and a lot of people tell me, why didn't you just build the system and roll it out to everybody? UK tried that. You know, that gets also back to, you know, feet on the ground. We are a country that believes in the power of the free market, the power of effective and efficient markets, innovating and creating competitive solutions that we couldn't have done on our own, right? The massive engine that's out there churning and that's creating this movement towards electronic health records is motivated by profit, and there's nothing wrong with that. But sometimes it needs to be channeled, led, a context created for what we're driving. The markets are, that big engine of the markets is driving us towards. So we use the markets. We're smart about that. We understand how capitalism works. We embrace how capitalism works. But it doesn't mean that it's a game where the odds are rigged, where the public benefit is forgotten about. So that's the role for government, is to make sure that the policies we establish are ones where they create a context where the markets can work to the public benefit, that the markets actually can work efficiently and effectively, that there's transparency. Markets can't work without transparency. We resolve information asymmetry. So use the markets. 5 is watch out for the little guy. Or open to all. There's a lot of work that's been done. And unfortunately, the smartest people in the world get in a room. And they build things that only the smartest people in the world understand. I'm looking at you, Floyd. And so, valuing simplicity and building systems so that the least able can participate is a principle that we bring to the work we're trying to do, which often means, as I tell Steve Posnack, our reg writer, don't be too clever. Sometimes you can find solutions that have 24 exclusions to meet every person's concern about that, but maybe simpler is better. Maybe not having those 24 exclusions and not expecting that you can find the data for those 24 exclusions in the electronic health record is better. Maybe having a manual override that just says excluded for patient reason or medical reason is better. It's not worse. It's not a step back. It's a step forward. Maybe simplicity is a virtue. Maybe parsimony is a virtue. And the last principle, as Don Berwick calls it, the prince among principles, is putting the patient in the center. And this has a lot to it. It's about the point of what's it all about, right? It's about, yes, we should talk about patient-centeredness as an independent goal, but from quality measurement, more profoundly, I think, it's about the patient's voice, too. We've forgotten a lot, and we're playing catch-up, frankly, on that. And it's not just the way it gets, minimized as patient, is the patient satisfied? That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about if the patient doesn't feel that their care was coordinated, you know what? It wasn't coordinated. There was someone told me about a study where they correlated, maybe someone of you did the study, they correlated the patient's report of cleanliness in the hospital with hospital infection rates. It's a pretty good correlation. So the patient's voice, I'm talking about functional measures, I'm talking about patient safety, I'm talking about patient care coordination, I'm talking about patient experience. And not just for a sample of patients who are mailed something, as an active tool for managing patient care. We don't have systems right now to do that, and we need to get there, where we can use multi-modes, you know? A lot of our patients now have these things in their pockets. Smartphones, texts, they access the internet. And to use those, broadening the range of ways in which we interact and engage patients. So there's a lot that we have to do, but I think if we keep to those principles, we will get through this, Todd Park calls it, this biggest barrier to healthcare changing, which is a product of long disappointments, like I talked about at the beginning, that have led to a wall of disbelief that healthcare can change. And in many ways, the biggest barrier to healthcare changing is that wall of disbelief, that it can change. And I'm here to tell you that wall is paper thin, because healthcare is changing, because the tools are there, because payment reform is here, and it's not going away. We're not going to be paying fee for service 10 years from now. We can't afford it. It's not going to happen. Health information technology is happening. It's here. And patients having tools to engage differently in their care is happening. It's here. It's not going away. And it's up to us to take those three strands and tie them together, twist them together into this new DNA for healthcare. And quality measurement out of electronic health records is the absolute beating heart of that new healthcare system. And we can't fail. Thank you. I think we have time for questions. Yes, the one person who's been paid. First of all, introduce yourself and tell us who's paying you for EHR-generated quality measures.
Hi,
Oh, your own health system. That's a step.
Mike Miro. I'm a practicing electrophysiologist involved with day-to-day HIT hand-to-hand combat, I would say. So very nice talk philosophically. But my question to you, first of all, our health system pays us a bonus quarterly based on submission of data through an ambulatory registry called Pinnacle.
Yeah.
I also represent the American College of Cardiology. Been involved with cardiovascular medicine for some time. So one of the problems that we see at the ground level is, although these are very lofty goals, is the systems that are in place, the vendors, community,
yeah.
Most of the solutions, although they're certified, are not usable. And so there's no usability metric for physicians, and this is particularly apropos to the smaller practices that are challenged with selecting a vendor. In cardiovascular medicine, most of the physicians have been driven into health systems now being employed so that they're forced to use deinstall functional systems and actually use some legacy system that, although they're certified, are not usable.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
If this is a single issue that I probably hear the most concerns about from practicing physicians, is the usability of the systems. And one of the most disheartening things for me was when I see different electronic health records, and there's now hundreds of options, and I see the extent to which they have not valued usability in their design. So if we're talking about data collection for quality measures, as one example, the easiest solution is you put a checkbox in. Right? I have a data element here. The hard way is to collect the data as the exhaust of healthcare. Right? Put it, that data element, in the right place in the workflow. And sometimes to get one measure, there are five different data elements that have to come from different people at different times in the workflow. Right? And what is the easy way for the vendor to do it? Make a checkbox that requires the provider to essentially do a chart review and then check the box to measure the quality measure. That's not going to work, right? So the question is, the observation is dead on. The question is, how do we move from there? How do we move from there? How do we get usability to be valued? And I got to believe that the market as a mechanism for this. We buy this brand of smartphone over this brand because we perceive that it's more usable. And usability is driven by the market, where the market works efficiently. Why in this market do we think usability has been slow? I don't think it's not happening. I think there is more and more attention to it, but there could be a hell of a lot more attention to it on the part of vendors than to adding the latest gadget. And I think a couple of reasons explain it. The first is, oftentimes, the consumers are asking for bells and whistles, not usability. They're asking for more widgets and more things that are specific to them rather than a simplification and a focus on usability. So if I'm a vendor, and I know some vendors very well who want to do the right thing by their customers, and they say to me, I have 600 requests for additions to my health record, and I have zero requests for subtractions. In fact, every time I take something away, a lot of people screaming about, well, I like that kludgy way of doing things before because I'm used to it, usability and eye to behold. The other thing is, there isn't information available for people to make their choices. I have sure so many physicians who say to me, I didn't know what I bought until 3 months after I bought it. So having transparency around usability is the first step, so that when someone's buying a system, they can look across not only features, functions, cost, but also usability measures. And we're working to develop those usability measures, working with NIST and the industry stakeholders to have some transparency around that. The other problem, frankly, is that oftentimes the decisions to purchase the system are not made by physicians. They're made by the CFO because we already have a contract with this vendor because of their practice management system. So that also, I think, is a call for physician leadership in these domains. But I don't think it's hopeless. I actually think that there are now vendors who are doing very well in the marketplace because they value usability, and those are going to be the vendors that succeed in an efficiently functioning marketplace.
Thank you. You're spot on with the comment on the typical decision maker is the CFO. Even in the smaller practices, it's a, you know, the ultimate decision on what vendor to select is based on a billing charge capture because we're in a obviously fee-for-service environment.
And when that changes, all of a sudden, one of the things I've heard from the chief medical information officers is, as we start getting into accountable care and improving quality, all of a sudden I have a seat at the table that we didn't have before. Thank you, Michael. And cardiologists are leading the way on meaningful use. Thank you.
Very good talk, of course, because we expect that from you. But two things come up here. When the ACO regulations came out for quality measures, as opposed to simplification, we got all those exclusion criteria on the measures when it comes to looking at the quality measures. So now the regulations are actually instilling complexity into the collection as opposed to simplification. So now we're going to have another update on our EMR vendors where they go in and they put in the check boxes that are required for ACO collection, driving this provider's way. The market analogy, the other thing is the market analogy that you talk about, one of the big keys for that was when we had number portability between our carriers.
That's a good point.
And we can't take our data and move it to the best new offer next year. And I think that those are the opportunities where I would say the government has to play a better role. Yeah. And I'm not meaning to
No. Listen, we have a proposed rule out for stage two certification criteria, which says that to the extent that it's feasible today, we think the most feasible thing is to take consolidated CDA patient care summary and do that over every patient in the practice and get a batch of those CCDs out of the One Health record for portability reasons. We're going to hear a lot of pushback from people who say it's not enough, it's not good enough, or it poses security risk, or whatever. But if you think that moving on portability is important, we need to hear from you in the comment period by May 7th through regulations.gov. We have proposed it, but if there's not support for it, it's not going to be in the final regulation. Portability is really high switching cost, the classic cause of market failure, and we're trying to see what we can do to address that. Your point about ACO rule, and I think any rule, right, is the problem is the tension between the tried and true today and where we know we have to go. So you can be sure that there was plenty of discussion within HHS and within the administration as a whole about the quality measure component of the ACO rule, and we tried very hard to align. And there is a great deal of alignment, actually, between those measures because the meaningful use measures, the inpatient quality reporting, and the physician quality reporting systems. And this is something, one part of the problem is these cycles of rulemaking, that before you can incorporate one new quality measure in this cycle of rulemaking, it's got to have come out in this cycle of rulemaking. So my hope in working with Kate and others is that we can start to rack and stack these alignments so that in many cases the meaningful use EHR incentive program can be the point of the spear, introducing the development and the deployment of new quality measures that are smarter, that do work better within electronic health records, do reduce the burden, and that then the payment and transparency programs can follow in the wake of that.
Just a last compliment. It's only because you improve the quality measure part that I even have to care about it. Because before it was just so burdensome that nobody was going there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's nice that I'm worrying about it now because the quality.
We should have such problems,
yeah.
As my mother-in-law said.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure to hear you talk. Your lack of enthusiasm, it needs to be improved, but...
Matt.
Only you, Larry.
I think Matt Kendall can help you with that.
Yeah.
I am a CEO of a multi-specialty medical group, and we've been doing quality metrics longer than 5 years. I want to say two things and get your comments. In the May 2010 New York Times Magazine, there was an excellent article on a data-driven life. And I won't summarize that, but if you go to the May 2nd, 2010, you ought to read it. A bioethicist, Onera O'Neill, made the following comment. I want to quote it, and I'll read it because I can't quote it. Beneath this admirable rhetoric, the real focus is on performance indicators chosen for ease of measurement and control rather than because they measure accurately what the quality of performance is. Probably the most challenging thing to measures is that the processes that result in improved health and the metrics that demonstrate, the outcome metrics that demonstrate improved health, which will result in decreased cost, which really addresses sustainability, which is the triple aim. And I've restated saying improved processes, improved outcomes in a sustainable fashion, which is just another vocabulary, is that it may be a five-step, you've already said it, but a five-step process that doesn't result to a single measurement, but it can be aggregated electronically if it's thought through and the process without the provider having to check a box or an outcome that is a multiple data-driven issue that can be aggregated electronically. But we've got to have the endorsement of these metrics. I want to comment on that, but I wanted to say one other thing because I won't get another chance. You ask, how can we get past these issues of chart reviews? I love NCQA, but they refuse to accept electronic data for medical home, for diabetes recognition, and all these other things. They demand that you have a subset of the whole rather than the whole being the subset. We can give them data on 8,000 patients with diabetes. They want 50. The complexity, and we've got to address that, and it's possible to address it.
Yeah, I think Larry made a great point about the different purposes of quality measures and ideally how they're linked to each other. So quality measurement and accountability and quality improvement, there may be, I was talking yesterday in Milwaukee with the leader of an HIV practice who's implemented outcome measures around viral load in their electronic health record. And for them, the bottom line is, of all the patients with HIV, how many are on medications with an undetectable viral load? And he said that he asks HIV practices in these leading institutions around the country, what's your rate? Right? You're an HIV clinic. You should know, of all your patients, how many of them are on meds with an undetectable viral load, right? Everybody should know that. Every plan should want that, right? And he said, these benchmark institutions around the country say, I don't know. But the other point he made was, that's the outcome. Undetectable viral load on meds. But he said, to get to that outcome, there's like 10 different process measures that he also tracks. Did patients come in for the visit? Are they lost to follow-up? Okay, well, we have an intervention for that process, right? We go out, we reach out, and we find them, we bring them back in. Are they on the meds? Did they fill the prescription, right? That's another process measure. If they're on the med, are they on the right med? If they're on the right med, is their viral load responding? Have they had a genetic test done? There's like 10 different processes that he can then optimize with different process measures that all add up to that big outcome measure. He needs to own those process measures. And for benchmarking and accountability and reporting purposes, we need to know the bottom line. So there's this difference between process measures for quality improvement and outcome measures for accountability, and the two need to be linked to each other. But we don't need to duplicate the process measures, I believe, in our accountability.
HIV clinics that treat HIV are not like us, who is a primary care clinic that we surveil and screen for HIV.
That may be your process measure.
And the fact is that with a single click, with a single button, five processing are each
provider in less than a second.
Yeah.
To accomplish that, making it simpler, easier to do it right than not do it at all.
Yeah.
Which is the first step toward creating a.
So for those on the phone, Larry's talking about making the processes easier so that the default thing, the easy thing to do, is the right thing to do. So order sets being linked to make things easier, the protocols. That's right. Hey, I'm getting the hook.
No. So first of all, I want to thank you. That was terrific, and I think the best charge we could have for today. So let me just make a couple comments that I think when I called Farzad to give this charge to you folks, the first thing he said to me, where did you find the bright lights? And that's the whole purpose of today. We've seen challenges. We've also seen what happens when you take a measure intended for a claims-based process and try to find that data in the EHR. What we found was people who entered it in a claim using, say, a CPT-2 code now have to enter a checkbox. So that didn't really change anything. So what we want to do is move forward to outcomes. It's the VA measure you referred to about warfarin. It's terrific. There are challenges in how do I say it in the standard? How do I put the logic in? So what I want all of you to think about is as you go through today, you're going to go through your breakouts in each of the areas, and Rosemary Kennedy is going to come up and give you the charge for each of those areas. How can we get there, and how can you're going to listen to vignettes of bright lights in each of your areas. How can we, what are the key success factors to make that work? And how can that feed where NQF is now moving to outcome measures, not looking at process, unless there's leading process to get to the outcome. How do we get there? And electronically, how do we make this directly queryable? So you're going to hear now from Rosemary. So thank you very much. I'm sorry we couldn't have longer questions, but keep them for the day.
How about this? Oh, that's better. Good morning, everyone. I think we should just give a round of applause for Dr. Kate Goodrich and Dr. Marcia Shari for those inspiring words to start us off today. I am Rosemary Kennedy, new at the National Quality Forum, Vice President for Health Information Technology, and registered nurse, and also an associate professor in practicing at Thomas Jefferson University in Philadelphia. So this is an exciting time. If you think about it, it's the first time that we've convened measure developers, providers of care, standards, organizations, healthcare providers, vendors together in one forum. So what I'm going to do is walk through our methods for today and our work. I promise this will be short and brief. We'll just spend the next 5 minutes and kind of go over what we're going to do today, and then we'll break out into our groups. There are basically five major groups covering the key domain areas of quality measurement. There's the implementation acute group and the implementation office-based practices. Both of those groups will be looking and center on the clinician interface, much of what you heard this morning, in terms of data capture, workflow management across the domains of acute care and office-based practices. There is a third group that's a technical group, and they will look at data and format of data, the structure and everything that's needed for quality measurement, looking at it from a technical perspective, focusing on the QDM and focusing on the healthcare measure format. Also, then, there's the clinical data analytics group. This group covers the complex domain area where data are collected, scrubbed, analyzed, and using that data for aggregation and looking at outcomes. So that's the clinical data analytics group. And then last, there's an innovation group. Thanks to input from our planning committee in HITECH, we added the innovation group to really rethink at the whole area of electronic quality measurement and look at some innovative methods and ways that we can approach the problem space area. I just at this point want to thank our track leaders. If anybody in the room is a track leader, if you could please stand up. They really worked extremely hard to help us put the content together. And if you think about it, this is really important because And the breakout group presenters, if anybody is in the room, if you're on the phone, you can stand up on the phone, and we'll give you a round of applause, because the breakout group presentations refer back to the best practice examples of what's going on in the market today. And I think this is really important, because all of the group track leaders and the vignettes represent all domains of the market that have come together to make this a success. Now we'll get into the breakout groups. Each group is a different color, as you can see here on the screen. So I want the two groups that have signed up for implementation acute and implementation office-based practices just for now to stay in this room. One more. And clinical data analytics will stay here as well. Okay, thank you, Beth. I just want to say that if you end up going to a different group, just a housekeeping item, lunches will go to the room that you're in for your breakout group. So if you switch groups, please just let us know so we make sure that we get you lunch at the appropriate time. So those that are in part of the technical group will go with Floyd Eisenberg. I think we all know who Floyd is. So when we break, if you find Floyd, Eisenberg, Chris Millett, Chris, raise your hand back there in the back of the room. He will help get you, and Ahmed here will get you to your breakout group. The clinical data analytics group will go with Beth Franklin. Beth, please stand up, wave your arm. Blue group, so if you look for the color card, that's the group that you should go to. So clinical data analytics is blue. The innovation group will be coming with me or Beth Carey. Beth Carey, where are you? Keep your arm in the air, as well as Lindsay. So what we're going to do now is we will break into our groups. Work will be conducted within each group from now until about 2 o'clock, and then we will reconvene in this room, which is very important, to summarize the work over the next 4 hours. So at 2 o'clock, we will reconvene in this room. That's okay. We will just guide them, okay. Christina. Thank you very much.
That we all very much want and is absolutely critical to deliver high-quality, cost-effective care. So I'm just very, very pleased. I want to thank our federal partners for providing startup money for this activity. Floyd tells me we have one more in-person meeting, and we have a webinar, and we'll be thinking a lot about how to keep this going long-term, because this is not the kind of collaborative that should only last for a few months. We need this to be going on for several years now that we've really got, I think, the right people at the table. I also want to take just a minute to thank Paul Tang and the HITAC committees, and also very definitely Floyd and Rosemary and the whole staff who have worked so hard on this effort to bring you all here together today. So thanks very much. Floyd, I'll turn it over to you.
Okay, thank you very much, Janet. I also heard tremendous feedback from what happened in every room. My apologies that I pretty much stayed in one room. Not that I'm an entire geek, but pretty much. That's why I wore my pink tie. That was the pink color of technical today. But I've heard that there's been great discussion. Everyone seems very excited, and we think we do have the right people in the room to have these discussions. So what I'd like to do is move toward the schedule for the afternoon is we're going to hear breakouts from each of the five groups about what were the goals, challenges, and key success factors that you heard, and we're going to be recording those. We have also significant help from Sean Griffin, who at least will stand, who will be helping to pull all this together from Memorial Hermann. For those of you who remember the webcast on March 15th, he presented the webcast on using ambulatory measures among, was it 300 practices? 800 practices. Maybe it was 300 that you updated in a month that was so. Yeah. That was their software within 300 separate practices in 1 month to get them all running on quality measurement.
So that was tremendous. And he'll be helping with this summarization. So what I'd like to do is not waste time, but move directly to the report outs from the groups. I believe the first group will be Dr. Moreau from the office-based practices.
Okay, thank you. For those of you who don't know me, I'm Kendra Hanley. I'm with the AMA-convened PCPI, so we're one of the major measure developers. With Dr. Miro, I helped coordinate and lead the discussion on the office-based practice. We had two clinical vignettes presented to us. One was from Dr. Marty Pfeiffer at Lehigh Valley in Pennsylvania. She shared with us a lot of the good work that's going on there. And then Dr. Miro also presented how at his practice in Fort Wayne, Indiana, they're using the Pinnacle cardiology data to actually collect data on the patients at the point of care and report out on the quality metrics as well. Great. So we came up with some best practices, gaps, and challenges, and then recommendations. Some of the best practices that were shared included to capture data at the point of care and the importance of working with the vendors to be able to actually make sure that you're collecting the data in a way that makes sense with your clinical workflow. That was really, really key, and we kept coming back to that throughout the morning and afternoon. Kind of linked to the capturing data at the point of care is actually providing feedback to the clinicians also at the point of care. We talked a little bit about the importance of having clinical terminologies using to capture the data in a structured manner, using some of the standardized nomenclatures like SNOMED CT in particular. Dr. Miro was advocating for using that as problem lists. Because of the ability to actually capture the granularity that you're looking for in the clinical data. Another piece is when implementing an initiative to start collecting and reporting on quality measures, the importance of transparency with the individual physicians, make sure that the message is clear and the practice really understands sort of the what, but also the why. So in looking at what is the quality initiative, why is it important to capture these measures, and then in looking at how you actually record the data when you see the patient, why is it important to make sure you're recording the data in the structured fields? And I think that was another point that we kept coming back to, that you really can't underestimate the importance of education with the clinicians and working with the vendors to actually make that happen. Another best practice is to start with something easy. Start with a small committed group that would be willing to maybe not live with the perfect solution from the start. And then, again, education on the importance, meaning, and methods before the measurement, use of structured data, and then sharing data to refine data collection. I think this point was really that you want to enter the data once and reuse it. And if you can minimize the points of data entry, you minimize error, and that'll increase the reliability of the data. But, so after looking at a lot of our best practices are also recommendations, but we'll go through the recommendations. We talked a lot about harmonization of measure specifications, measures, terminology, and the use of measures and output for reporting. So the need to not only use the same measures across programs, but also have the same reporting mechanisms across programs with the same specifications. We had several representatives from various specialty societies in our group, and you know, there's a gap, I think, in for a lot of the specialties that either there aren't measures, but also we talked about not having EHR technology for a given specialty, and that uptake of the EHR products, the folks from neurology, for example, said uptake is fairly low in their specialty. Another thing we talked about was the need that the information in the EHR does not provide all the information that you need. So we talked through the example of how do you know if a patient has died? So all you know is that they stopped coming to your practice. That practice, it could be that the patient moved, they changed doctors, it could also be that they died. And so how do you get all of those other external inputs into the EHR just so that you have the pieces of information that you need, but then also how do you validate that information that's coming potentially into your system to ensure that it's been reconciled and validated and is accurate. We thought another recommendation would be to explore the use of new technologies such as natural language processing. That could be one mechanism to help maybe with this input of data into the EHR. And then we talked about something that Dr. Mostashari said this morning to emphasize what's the eye on the prize? What are we really looking to get at? I think that's it. So is there anything else you want to add, Dr. Miro?
Thanks, Kendra. We had a very energized session with a nice discussion, but I think the big issues are we're still struggling with some of the challenges we articulated here. Hopeful that we get clinician buy-in early for the specialties that don't seem to be adopting e-measures and, more importantly, even the electronic solutions that are already out there. So I think more case examples of success stories of how practices have demonstrated the value of this are important. And I think Marty from Allentown is in the back there. Her group actually created their own CMS registry just for their multi-specialty practice. It's a good example of how they were outside the box and now demonstrate on a point-of-care basis exactly how each clinician is doing. So the clinician has instant feedback by querying the registry on how they're doing, for example, with heart attack care or heart failure care or diabetes care. So thanks.
Yeah, one final piece that we talked about was the specialty societies could certainly take a lead in identifying the pieces of information, so the actual data that is important to be measured in a given specialty, that could be one place as a starting point as well. So I wanted to mention that one. Does anyone else from our group want to add anything?
Okay, well, I want to thank you. That was excellent. Again, I've heard a lot of great things from every group, and thank both of you. I'm sorry I didn't introduce Kendra. I introduced Dr. Moreau. So our next breakout is acute, and I heard terrific things about that one as well. And so who is presenting from the acute breakout? Zahid Butt and Ginny Meadows.
Thank you, Floyd. Sure you don't want to come up here?
No?
Let me all by myself? Okay. well, we had a very energetic group as well, and it was actually well represented by a whole bunch of different stakeholders, if you will, which included obviously hospital folks. We had not just hospital folks, but both IT and quality represented within the institutions. And we also had vendors. We had consultants, couple of physicians, and also Debbie Krause from CMS. So we had a very well-rounded group and very, very nice and good discussion. Our two vignettes were presented by two acute care facilities, one in Rolla, Missouri. There are two 242-bed hospital. Pam Feeler and Lindy Morrow, who were back there, presented their experience with meaningful use. They have attested. They're a stage six hospital. And then we had from Texas Health Resources, Tana Jackson and Amy Crow, and they both, again, represent both the IT side as well as the quality side. And they are a very large health system with 13 hospitals and I don't know how many millions of visits every day, every year. They presented their experience again in being able to attest for stage one. And the most important point was that in both cases, they have not just attested, but they have done the, it appears, the CQMs with a lot of effort and thought, which is very commendable. So in terms of the best practices, the interesting first bullet was that someone from within the group said that best practices has a connotation which sometimes gets them into trouble with physicians, because physicians will bring in a piece of document or a study that will be the best practice, and the guideline is not quite the best practice at that point in time because of the lag in how the guidelines get updated and implemented. So they use the term leading practices as a substitute to get out of that problem. So we kind of put that up on, we sort of thought that was an interesting point of discussion. In both instances, they were very successful because they had a very collaborative, multi-stakeholder team concept that got involved right from the beginning, which included the IT people, the quality people, the clinicians, as well as their vendor in some cases. So that was one of the important takeaways from their success. They had strong physician leadership / champions who were going around and were being proactive about the effort. They do try to proactively spend time to educate people. And the two types of education that they described is important. One is sort of the general education about this whole space and how it is changing quality measurement, but then also specific education in areas that those measures apply to. So, for example, ED would get specific education towards ED measures, whereas perhaps the cardiologist would deal with the cardiology measures. And they also engaged. So again, you know, the gist of the whole thing was that they engaged a lot of people in the process. So some of the gaps that were identified, there is, again, the timeliness issue that I just mentioned. And, of course, the second one is probably not new information for anyone in this room. It's that old difficulty in trying to capture structured data, because much of the data capture nowadays, at least currently, is unstructured. And so what the group felt was that it is possible to actually increase the amount of structured data capture as long as you have the right people at the table and they come up with the right workflows. In some cases, they had to push the envelope a little bit beyond what the vendor provided them to accomplish some of the data capture. But certainly there is a gap in terms of not having enough structured data so that the e-measures can be totally seamless. And then There are certainly technical issues in capturing the structured data in terms of how the system is designed, and we had a lot of discussion around that. But there are also cultural issues that need to be overcome. And again, that sort of comes back to clinician engagement and leadership that helps to make it less painful. It will not be painless, but it hopefully is less painful. So again, the recommendations that we came up with were that there was a definite need for field testing of e-measures because there is a risk of losing credibility with clinicians if the measures have not been tested and they are being asked to follow them or record data for. So the more measures can be field tested before they're actually implemented, we feel that that would be very helpful at the institution level. And so leading versus best practice, we discussed that little issue. The next recommendation is really to try to sort of keep the idea that we're all moving towards as much structured data as possible. So we had some back and forth on that, that unless we sort of keep that as our sort of true north, we're not going to get there, because if you already go with the premise that majority of data cannot be captured in a structured fashion, then you won't actually have eventually structured data. So I think there was the feeling that we should try to have whatever cultural and technological solutions that we can have to try to get more and more structured data as we go forward. And then for whatever pieces of unstructured data that is left, hopefully the innovation group or somebody will sort of give us some ways to convert that into more usable information, and that's one of the sort of missing pieces at this point. We had some discussion around usability testing as a quality issue, because it's often discussed in the context of, well, how easy or difficult it is for someone to use a product. But the group felt that it actually has quality measurement implications as to how easy or difficult it is for clinicians to capture data in a more structured fashion. So usability should incorporate the quality measurement as a specific goal in terms of data capture. And then finally, there was a fair amount of discussion around specification and standards sometimes not jiving or matching each other, so that there were some examples where the HITSB specification may not have had the value sets that are being captured in a certain way. So the idea was to try to align the specifications and the standards that have been approved so that there are no gaps within that framework. So also, I think everyone felt that we understood the reason to try to capture things in SNOMED, but I think there was also recognition that ICD-9 or 10 would be sort of necessary, at least for the foreseeable future, in addition to provide the necessary data that e-measures would take and would be captured during the workflow of the coding process and physician documenting against problem lists. So those were some of our recommendations. The final recommendation, which is not on this, was that there was recognition that there was a lot of talent in that room, and we were feeding off of each other, and we were hoping that this is something that can be continued, and that many people recognize that a lot of hospitals around the country don't have the type of talent that was there, and if there was some way to synthesize this information and broadly distribute, that would be very useful for folks out in the field. So, Ginny, you want to add anything more to elaborate on
this? Yeah, thanks, Zahid. The only thing that I was looking at these slides and thought we had we'd talked about something that's not up here that came up in both best practices and recommendations was around the time that both of our folks that did the vignettes talked about that they took at the very beginning of the whole process, doing a really thorough analysis of the quality measurement specifications, really thinking about their workflow, and really understanding how they needed to do their implementation before they started. And that also came up as a recommendation because we all felt that, you know, they had time, they tried to put as much time as possible, but we all know that we didn't have the luxury of a lot of time. So we really think that a strong recommendation is to allow more time to really think about this whole process of how you're going to implement these. So time for the measure specifications for de novo measures to be developed in a thoughtful way and with field testing, time for the vendors to do the right thing about how they get implemented, and then time for the healthcare providers to really absorb the changes that are going to have to happen as a result of some of these new quality measures.
Right. More time, and I think in both those instances, probably even a little bit more resource because this is really an additional thing that they are doing at least through the transition. Anything you guys want to add? Nope. Okay, that's our report. Thank you.
Thank you very much to the entire team and especially the presenters as well for pulling that together quickly. We are now going to the technical breakout, and I believe we have Anil Avanti from Indian Health Service to present. And since I spent most of my time there, I want to thank everyone in the room for very interesting and actually very productive discussion. So I'll let Anil summarize.
Great. Well, great to be here, and really exciting to see fellow quality measure specialists in the room. So I'm Anil Advani. I'm Associate Director for Informatics at IHS, and part of my purview is working on the sort of nitty-gritty on automating our quality measures as well as our measurement. So let's see. Can we go to the first slide? So we had a very animated discussion, and including over lunch and sort of every spare minute. So this is sort of only the beginning and really just sort of food for thought for all of us in the room. So we had, other than Floyd, we had the folks who are developing the technical specifications for the HQMF in the Query Health project that ONC is sponsoring, as well as folks who are measure development stewards at AMA, NCQA, and similar organizations, and then actual on-the-ground folks at hospitals. And so it was a nice mix of folks, and everybody sort of was highly opinionated as well as sort of had a lot of depth behind their opinion. So it was actually a really excellent discussion, and I'm not going to be able to sort of completely give you these sort of crystallized, you know, logically consistent summary, and actually that was one of the points we made in quality measurement, but this is sort of somewhat organized but not sort of perfect list of everything that we talked about. So I think we did have some structure, which was sort of to try and identify goals, challenges, or gaps, as well as recommendations like all the other groups did. We did come up with sort of three really specific things that are going to be very helpful for the balloting process for HQMF or sort of similar efforts, and the sort of general coordination between the quality data model and the HQMF work at ONC. So I think it was actually a really productive conversation from that perspective. We actually got three or four very specific technical level strategies that will really kind of oil the gears and make sure everybody's working together in harmony. So that's coming up in a second. So, let's do the bullet point thing first. So. So I think one concept that so we start off with, you know, our goals, and one of the goals was that In fact, there's a distinction between trying to create a logical model or technical specification for what's in a quality measure and what quality measurement is and the processes in quality measurement versus the sort of logical model of the data itself and the EHRs, and that each of those will have its own evolutionary pathway sort of going to the future. And that in spite of the fact that we would like to have some sort of practical on-the-ground work going on immediately or very soon, that we shouldn't forget that those are independent elements that have their own sort of dynamic, and we want to make sure that we leave room for capturing the sort of work on both those ends. The other goal is, of course, the sort of obverse of that, which is, in fact, we do want to have electronic tool sets that allow you to sort of measure directly, but also you want to have electronic tool sets that work on that first piece, that quality data model itself, that process of modeling quality measures, which in essence is the sort of most human part of it. That is sort of what all of us sort of most directly deal with, and there's a lot of room for automation there. Whether it's sort of coming up with automated tools to compare whether one set of measures for cardiovascular care, MI, million hearts, is sort of exactly the same or derived from, you know, something that CMS has come up with in the past and PQRS, et cetera. Being able to maintain over time the same quality measure as new drugs are created and as there's sort of a divergence or a temporal gap between standardization and sort of development of best practices or leading practices, the relationship between decision support and guidelines and evidence-based medicine and then quality measures derived from them, that's sort of on the authoring side of the process that could benefit from computational tools. This idea that has I think been mentioned very well in the previous two summaries, which is you really want to have as a goal to reduce the sort of operational clinical burden to actually do quality measurement. And so as much as possible, as Farzad mentioned earlier in the day, to embed quality measurement in the regular clinical operational process. And then there's another point that was mentioned earlier in the day, which is that we don't want the tail wagging the dog. We want the improvement of human health, the improvement of health, the improvement of medical care, to be the fundamental driver of the requirements for all of these technical tasks. And so, in fact, we want to not limit our measures to things that we think can currently be measured the easy way. We want to allow expressivity in our languages for quality measurement that allow us to sort of express in English or in something more structured what we really want to measure, and then have the rest of the infrastructure kind of play into that, as opposed to the other way around, even if we are trying to be practical. So that's the first bit, I think. Or are there more goals? Okay, so we're up to challenges. So we hinted at some of these, and obviously these are connected to the sort of reasoning behind the goals a little bit. And so we mentioned sort of some dialectical sort of relationships here, where there's no right answer and sort of the design constraints are somewhere in the sweet spot in between. So one of those is this idea of data liquidity versus expressivity, and that's sort of been more of a buzzword from the PCAS report. And so, for instance, here the question is, whether or not you want to create really flat measurement specification languages or allow sort of variation and depth to allow much more specific meaning to be modeled, but then have a greater burden of implementation to sort of map all the details from your EHR or even from just your quality measurement process. And then related to that is that second bullet point where basically do you expect systems to just be able to sort of have the data there with a simple query that or do you expect sort of some sort of black box reasoning to be required and therefore much more expensive custom implementation before you can actually produce the answer? And of course, you know, there's an optimal sweet spot in there to allow quality measurement to achieve state-of-the-art goals for improvement for our healthcare system and yet not completely be so unreachable that we can actually practically kind of give legs to our clinical policies. So we sort of mentioned this as well, which is that other same sort of dichotomy between relying on the burden of the end user or the physician, clinician at the EHR to do their own sort of mini chart review, have a lot of checkboxes versus have something completely very explicit that is very liquid. And related to that is, you know, it's sometimes you want to actually pause and force physicians to make note that they've actually kind of carried out a specific step and attest to a specific step. And so there's no right answer here as well. There's a tension between having an explicit, in-your-face, sort of burdensome requirement on the quality measurement versus just having it happen automatically. A couple of other challenges is copyright issues with standardized tools and results, and for the Cognoscenti, that should be self-explanatory with specific examples. And then this other one, which is actually also really interesting, and if you imagine, you know, this conceptualization of the distinction between EHR data models and clinical quality measure data models, the mapping between them can be, you know, done now today hardwired, or it can be a little bit more sophisticated with a little bit more parameterization, allowing the sort of good side of being underspecified today, because that allows you to evolve over time. And so that's what this next bullet point is, that, you know, hardwiring measure implementation has both its benefits as well as costs. Okay, next slide. Okay, so we have more challenges, so I'll, well, let's just go through these quickly. So again, EHR is sort of more of a use model, whereas quality data model is sort of more of a model of meaning, of inferencing, of making inferences after the fact about data, and so there's sort of a distinction there. Prescriptive requirements as to exactly where the EHR data, so this is, again, that sort of hardwired versus non-hardwired issue. And then there was sort of the whole cycle time of actually just like there is with the measurement cycle time that was sort of mentioned earlier in the implementation groups, there's also the quality development cycle time or the standards processes, which also have their cycle time. So they're sort of managing that within the choices that are made in what types of standards and what types of technical specifications to adopt is really important. Okay, let's go on to the recommendations. Okay, so here's where we come back to those sort of three things that we kind of crystallized on. Number one is you want to leave room for future innovations and implementation, either of design of EHRs, of additional effort to actually specify quality measures. And so just like HL7 currently has an escape hatch where they have sort of a narrative block in addition to the structured information, we said that we should leave room for narrative blocks in English to accompany any sort of structured parts of e-measure specifications, whether that's on the quality data model side or the sort of mapping side of healthcare quality markup frameworks and XML. So although we like structured information and structured exchange, we shouldn't forget that English is also a placeholder for the ability to ask more complex queries, and we shouldn't disallow that in our structured sort of standards processes. And then don't forget tool sets, because so that's the second recommendation is really the sort of winners are the folks who are most successful with kind of marketing their tool sets. And so, you know, supporting our community with really great tool sets is a really important goal of technical specification as well. We kind of made that third point of prescriptive requirements should be avoided as much as possible to leave robustness for evolution. We made the point about this distinction between a quality model and the EHR model. And then, of course, there's sort of education and training requirements. So I think that's a reasonable summary. Oh, another slide. Okay, let's go on to the. Oh, okay. Okay, well, these are the other two kind of things about HQMF. So I think the main point here was we don't want to be so prescriptive on that sort of relationship between the models for what you put into a quality measure and the models for what you get out of a EHR, what you can ask from an EHR. We don't want to be so prescriptive of that relationship now that we don't leave room for HQMF templates to evolve over time. And so the main point here is that XML specification for that mapping between those two sides of modeling and then actually, you know, hitting the data should allow for English clauses and escape hatch. And that we call that sort of like the phenotype rather than sort of specifying the phenotype rather than specifying the genotype. And I think that sort of captures, oh, there's more? Okay. So I think that English language thing is what I made, right? Okay, so there's a long list. All right, well, you can read about it. Okay. All right. Well, I tried.
Yeah, no, this is great. That technical stuff always gets detailed, as you see. Let's move to clinical data analytics breakout. And we have Karen here to present.
Hi, everyone. Well, I think the good news about going towards the end is you're going to be writing a little bit less. Yeah. But there's a lot of great points. And we had a really nice room full of people with various expertise. Two of our members, Dr. Ted Paleen, and then Dr. Chris Schneider went ahead and provided the vignettes. When we think about some of the best practices that we talked about, you know, a lot of times it comes back to some of the key things that Dr. Mustashari brought forward at the beginning of the day. Keeping it simple, right? Don't jump in with both feet, you know? And how about not forgetting about the underdog, the small guys out there? Because a lot of times we look at what's going on in the larger hospital organizations, the larger medical groups. They have more resources. They have more technical knowledge. And at the smaller level, the community level, we're not going to be able to have the same kind of reach as far as the technology. We focus a lot on the fact that getting clinicians involved is really key. And we've been brought in before, but when we start thinking about measures and we started to think about what Dr. Mustashari said, Coumadin, right? It's low-hanging fruit. It's something that could make a huge difference immediately. And one of the things that Dr. Schneider had mentioned is that some of the measures that they've developed at their organization has brought really remarkable rapid change. And it was able to get the physicians to really buy into it because they could understand, they could see how it would bring immediate benefit to their patients. Not only do you have to go ahead and create these opportunities, but then you have to share it and really show the best practices. And when we think about some of the things, for instance, that was done in Dr. Schneider's organization or at Kaiser Permanente, Dr. Pillian's organization, great, great models proven to have wonderful outcome. Maybe we need a better forum to go ahead and start sharing those best practices as well. Now, there's a couple of things, obviously, that came up about measures themselves. And the whole idea is, you know, at the beginning of the day, we heard this great analogy, right? So we've gone from a drought of data to now a watershed of data. It's kind of murky. There's a lot of it, but now we need clarity. We need clear water. We need nutritious water. And how do we get through all of this data and to offer this kind of a view, right, from the data that we have? So when we think about the measures, let's use the measures to bring some of that nutrition that we want, right? Are we measuring outcomes? Are we seeing an opportunity to revise and improve? Then ensuring that what's actually being measured is what we're after, right? Because a lot of the time, if it's a claims-based measure, right, we're actually looking at billing codes and not really capturing perhaps what's really going on with the patient. Is that really what we want to measure? Is that really going to give us the outcome that we're looking for? Gaps. Well, we know that it's probably going to get a little worse before it gets better. We're going through some growing pains. I think that's, you know, there's some of the opportunities through the NQF webinars, if you've been lucky enough to be a part of them in the past. If not, hint, hint, they're on the website. Take advantage of them. They were really good at showing some of the opportunities that organizations have had to learn and to start to understand just how rich and wonderful the data is going to be as a result of going through this evolutionary process. There is nothing non-painful about it, I think we can all agree. But in the end, where we're going to get as far as being able to understand how to better care for the patients is what we're starting to see in the discussion. One of the things that perhaps is, again, the translation of data, there's not just one system capturing the data, right? In a hospital system, you've got multiple systems. And we have to be able to do a better job as far as getting the knowledge out of all of these systems, and that's going to take time. But from a measure development standpoint, right, if a measure is going to be developed requiring multiple systems to capture the data, it is going to require a lot of extra time. Nothing is really going forward without still a lot of human intervention. And so it was discussed earlier, the concept of maybe some more time up front, maybe some more resources, right? Because this is an iterative process where we're learning through this evolution. And in addition, there's going to have to be an opportunity for people to stop and improve along the way, but in a way to be able to make sure that the data that's being generated actually is going to be able to provide us that end result. You're going to see this concept of a death by a thousand clicks. So are we getting to the data with a thousand clicks, or can we get there a little faster, right? Which gets to the point of not all the data that we think is there and so easily accessible can be easily reached and interpreted and put into care immediately. Setting standards, we've been talking about that. We've already talked about the claims-based environment. And this last one gets back to harmonization, but it's harmonization from the standpoint of, can we all get around the table and agree? Because it could be that the guidelines are saying one thing and the measures are being developed based on those guidelines, but what the payers are asking the medical community to do might not exactly match up to exactly what those guidelines or those measures are saying. Good? Okay, good. Okay, opportunities and recommendations. So, first and foremost, making sure that we get buy-in up front by providers. Go after the low-hanging fruit, right? We actually think that there's an opportunity to, and this goes against what was just said by the previous presenter, which is start small and then go ahead and get more complex over time. A lot of the things that we're hearing, you know, especially as we start getting ready for meaningful use stage two, a lot of people are saying, can we just slow down on more measures? You know, we just had to figure out how to first capture the data. Now we have to figure out how to really report on the data. And can we just focus on just doing that step next instead of trying to bring in more and more measures all of a sudden? And so I think it gets back to that time issue. Can we just have a little bit more time to get our feet squarely planted in this new world so that we can understand how to make the most out of the data that we're now capturing, how to really do process improvement based on this new data that we have? And, you know, one of the people in the room, you know, was a measure developer, and this is what was so wonderful about having this mix of people today. Because the idea is, you know, measure developers are out there and they're trying to understand, okay, where's the crystal ball? Where are we going to be? I'm going to build a measure, but what does it have to be based on where the technology is going to be? And that's this important discussion that actually has to happen when we talk about people coming together and educating. So that was one of the things that we were talking about, is the educational opportunities as well. I've got the time sign, so that's a good thing for you. I'm going to get down off the stage real quick. Okay, and I don't think there's really anything else here that's going to be breathtaking. Let's see, usability, and then, of course, considering the care in the entire value chain. Okay, I think we're done. Thank you.
What?
Thank you very much. And we saved innovation till the last presentation, so we can. They're going to have solved all the problems for us, right?
Okay. Is that what we were supposed to do? Hi, everybody. I'm Dwight Brown. I'm from Mayo Clinic. Sean, how's the hand doing there?
Oh, great, great.
All right. Got that pitching arm all warmed up. All right. Good. Excellent. Well, unlike the other groups, we didn't have any enthusiasm in our group whatsoever. Laziest group of people you've ever seen. It was terrible. No, we had a lot of enthusiasm in our group and really had good brainstorming about what the issues and challenges were. Rather than spend time on the issues, I think, can we skip right over to the solution? Keep going. Let go back to the innovative examples. Let me touch briefly on these. I think we've got a little bit of time to make up here, so I'll go very quickly. We tried to get down to a little bit of the nuts and bolts, and so we did a little brainstorming session and had everybody come up with an idea of what they thought might be an innovative approach. So some of the ideas that we had were to have the EMR vendors and measure developers have some sort of e-measure collaborative to help to learn, come up to speed, and think about common data models. Use the quality data model as a common ontology. Have vendors have some sort of standardized areas within the EMR dedicated to quality measures. Registry-based reporting, statutory requirements for EHR vendors. That one went over very well with our EHR vendor person in the room. Integrate population management and case management into the EHR. Next slide. Have HIEs collect and report one measure per highest cost condition. Vendors need a single source of truth library. Common interface devices of devices to the EHR, really monopolizing on the technology that's out there. Patient-centered input and aligned quality data that will travel with the patient. So we tried to boil things down to what are the biggest concepts that we think, and really it fell into one of three categories. One of the category was the learning category, helping EHR vendors understand and everybody understand quality data model and different data types that are out there. So they either fit into that category or the category of structure. And then we talked also a lot about the business case for all this. So there's a lot of investment going on, but what we're seeing and hearing is that the investment seems to be a one-way street. The dollars are going out. They're not necessarily coming back in for the investment. Some of the ideas, a unique personal health identifier, very consistent with what we've heard from the other presentations, is transparency of measures. Both at the physician level and at other levels. Some sort of knowledge library, including some sort of harmonization of existing measures accessible at the point of care. Aligning with clinical decision support, QDM as the common ontology across all measurement. We talked about the patient goals and the patients, getting the patients involved in the care and how the fact that we're being held accountable for these measures. But some of these measures, that you have low patient adherence to some of the evidence-based care. So let's have some of the transparency out there with that. Standardization across the EHR vendors. This thought that the quality measure should be incidental to care. It should not be a goal that we're aiming for. And so it should just be part of the breadcrumbs that are laid along the way within the documentation process. Sustainable business model of HIT, basically for everybody. Measure developers need the funding to be able to develop the measures. Providers need the funding. Everybody needs the funding and some sort of business model that's sustainable for this to work. A lot of focus on the value equation and transparency around the value equation, looking at decreasing cost, increasing the quality, make doing things right easy, being mindful of personal preferences and privacy, especially on the part of the patients. Standardized quality reporting. So those of you who are on the provider end can sympathize with the fact that we report our quality measures in multiple venues. So we have hospital IQR reporting, we have meaningful use reporting, PQRS reporting. In Minnesota, we have Minnesota Community Measure reporting, registry-based reporting, on and on and on. We're reporting to all these different venues. We need one single point of submission. Transparency value equation, and provide tools to help the EHR vendors understand the quality measures. A lot of talk around there, around the table, that EHR vendors are feeling like they're on the uphill curve of learning about this. And I think we all feel that way to a good extent. So those were the main points from our meeting. Thank you.
Thank you. So I've heard a lot of great discussions and a lot of common themes. And we now have a bit of time when we can kind of discuss things that we've heard and look toward next steps as we move forward. So we'll be talking about that for a bit of time, and we'll have Sean with the comments that you've written down here kind of help lead some of that discussion to what some of the common themes that we've heard.
Well, it may be tough for you to see in the back of the room. What I was trying to do is I was trying to write down things as they came up, obviously writing a lot in the beginning and then sort of cut down as things went on. Some recurring themes I tried to circle in red. I just want to talk through some of them. I think that as I was listening to this, my mind lately is caught up on the idea of frameworks. And I think that we have a lot of constituencies in the room. I think that when I try and think about the concepts that I really would want to lift out of this, very few of these things are brand spanking new. I think that if we would put a list together a couple years ago, it would have been very similar to many of these things. And that was actually something we talked about down in the innovations group was, okay, what are we going to put up here that's innovative? You know, what are we going to put up there that wasn't written 2 years ago? But I do want to sort of run through the things that I highlighted in red. And these are not the right answers just because I highlighted them in red. These are just my thoughts. I'm perfectly happy to take comments. Partnering. There's a lot of people that we need to have on board with this. Everybody from the vendors to the users to, in our organization down at Memorial Hermann, you know, the EHR touches everything. It touches the patients. It touches the caregivers. It touches the clerk in the emergency room. You know, as I go out and I work with offices, I find that, you know, office turnover at the front desk where people are registered completely compromises what you have for demographics, and then you have to deduplicate and all this sort of stuff. And so all of these things feed together. But when we partner, you know, it's easy to sort of represent your own area. We need to partner with the clinicians. We need to partner with the vendors. We need to partner with the payers. We need to partner with everybody. And I think that the NQF is in a unique situation where it can bring this sort of group into the room. I mean, down in the innovation group, we had a vendor representative down there. And I said at one point, I said, you know, this could turn into the vendor pinata, where you just sort of everybody picks up a stick and starts swinging until the candy falls out. And that's not what this is meant to be, because I think we all own pieces of this. I think that workflow, I think the idea of quality documentation is being an exhaust of the work that's being done. Because nobody walked across the stage at medical school, was handed a diploma and said, congratulations, you're a documenter. You know, they went into medicine. They did not go into documentation. Standard structures. You know, what can you standardize? What can't you structure? What can't you standardize? You know, this idea of liquidity versus expressivity balance. I'm pretty sure that there's 5 federal grants that you could get just from trying to explore that one area here. I mean, what do you need to structure? What do you not need to structure? I mean, 3 years ago, I was a primary care physician practicing in my office. And I try not to forget that, you know, in my organization, I represent everybody from top-of-the-line neurosurgeons in the Texas Medical Center to a podiatrist out in a rural area. How do we engage all of those people? How do we not just become representing the people who we saw at work yesterday? Education with clinicians. Most clinicians, most busy clinicians, are sort of like the person on the treadmill on the cruise ship. You know, you may be going to the islands, but they're worried about the next mile that they're doing in their office. And so you can change course. They're still doing their mile. They're still getting through their next hour's worth of patients. And I think that we need to educate them, and to not just educate them, but to educate everyone around them. Because if I talk to the doctor in a practice and I don't get the office manager engaged, none of that's going to stick. If I don't get their favorite office nurse engaged, none of that's going to stick. And so we have to think about who we bring into the room and who we spend the time to get their buy-in. Start small, build success. In some ways, this is like all those technology implementations that we've done for all these years. You know, you need some early wins, some quick wins, some poster children that you can point to and say, see, they did it and they didn't crash and burn. I used to have a partner in my practice who was one of those guys who defined himself by how many patients he saw this day. And every time we'd go through something new, he'd say, Griffin, am I going to be back where I was in 3 months, happy with the number of patients I saw? And I said, yes, you're going to hurt for a while. You're going through chaos. You're going to come back up on the other side. And after about the third time of me reassuring him and him coming out the other side, I didn't have to reassure him anymore. But we have doctors out there who are small business people who are worried about making payroll. And if you want to tell me that you're going to put in 6 quality measures that they need to do, what's in it for them? And it may not be money, okay? And so this transparency is another thing that I think we heard a lot about, especially within organizations. I've said before, I feel like a trainer on The Biggest Loser when it comes to talking with physicians. I am telling them that they need to get in shape because their quality measures are going to be exposed on the billboards and on the internet. And most of them just think that it's the day after Thanksgiving and they can't imagine that swimsuit season is coming. Well, swimsuit season is coming for all of us, every doctor, every clinic, every hospital. Bedside user involvement, as I said, liquidity, expressivity balance, model of use versus model of meaning. You know, we've had too many systems that were developed by people in a little cubicle and not listening to the people at the bedside, and we need to find ways to engage them earlier in the process. Because if we go through 9/10 of the design before we get to the end user, we need to undo 5/10 of the design. The cycle time of standards. Okay, I think that has gotten better recently. I think that having some sort of fence posts out there where we know where things are going, where we know some of the quality measures, is an improvement, because you can't just change technology on a dime. I mean, if anybody has gone to buy light bulbs recently and has seen that we're phasing out some and phasing in others and those sort of things, you know, you can't just drop everything and start up your new game. You never find the same team in the NBA championships as in the Super Bowl. They're great teams, but they're playing different games. Harmonize everything, okay? Would you give us one choir book, please? You know, that's what we need. We need measures. We need the specs on the measures. We need the reports. We need the way to submit the reports. Natural language processing, inference engines, those sort of things. I'm a little concerned about that, and this is just a personal bias. I think we're always looking for the hover car and the personal robot maid. And I think that we've sort of seen that in the diagrams, and I think natural language processing, I think, has a role for advancing what we can do. But I have a deep-seated fear of a career of checkboxes. But let's make sure we're ready for that as it gets better and better. You know, I tried a tablet computer in 1997, and I stopped trying it in 1997, and my wife bought me another iPad just last Christmas. I think that we have to be ready for technology to change the rules that we've been playing by. Better, more structured data, but not all just structured data. You know, standardize what we can, put it in fields if we can. Field testing, usability. One thing that we talked about in our group, which I thought was very interesting but didn't make the final cut, was I thought if in your HCAHPS survey you recorded what was the EMR used to deliver your care, and how satisfied were the caregivers and the patients with it? Did it interfere with care? And by the way, we're just going to post that on a website by vendor. Would that change things? I like being a little disruptive at times. Involve the patient. In our organization, we talk about serious safety events. And a couple of our hospitals now actually have a patient come in and present their case that became a serious safety event. And it has turned the morbidity and mortality noon meeting from 5 people to 200 people. and with patient consent and all those sort of things. But, you know, we need to involve the patients and the people and the caregivers and the family, because I want to hold them also accountable for the things that they do. And we need to find ways to capture that also. Plug and play. You know, it'd be nice if I stepped on my scale and it gave me, this is what your weight appears to be. Do you want it uploaded to your EHR? And I could change it. But I think we need to do those things. I think we're on a burning platform, because I love cliches. I think we're on a burning platform, but my feet aren't hot yet. So we need to take the time to build the next platform right, and better than we've built the old ones, because there's really been some bad things we've tried to implement and then uninstall. Logical data models, electronic tool set for common components, reduce the burden of collection. You know, I just think that's huge for organizations. I think that we're using the sneaker interface and the paper interface when we should be having electronic collection and electronic interfaces. And with the finances and the values going the way that they are, I don't think we can afford to do that. I just know that in my organization, we have an army of people going out and doing what I call chart dives, where they put on the scuba gear and they jump down into the paper chart and they come up 2 days later with, look, I found something. I think we need to reduce that burden. And when you get down to the practices that I have, where you have, you know, a physician, their spouse is the office manager, and one MA, they're not going to be able to do it. And when you put a threshold of ACO participation of 100% of hitting these measures, congratulations. You've not only marginalized them, you have slapped them in the face by saying you want their involvement in what you're doing when it comes to quality. I got tired at the end, so I stopped circling things. Sorry about that. Sustainable business model. You know, I'm pretty sure all of us had to pay for our clothes, had to pay for our trips here, had to pay for the hotel last night. And I think that we need to figure out how we're going to pay for all the things that we want to do and that we need to do to deliver quality care. But it's a different model than what we got paid for yesterday. You know, if you straddle the fence long enough, you're going to get hit between the legs. That's quite a visual, wasn't it there just a sound? Anybody in the room have other comments? I just was, you know, riffing on this one.
So first of all, I really appreciate another view on everything that was heard, and I think that was terrific. So let me ask the group, from everything you've heard and that actually excellent summary, what are some of the key things that you've heard today that you want to see happen and that you feel are important as we try to move this forward? For those of you who speak, can you keep it to two or three things?
Lloyd, consistent thing I've heard and is how good a job you guys have done in putting this together. Okay. And we need to do some more of it. So I wanted to, before everybody starts heading to the airport, thank you and Rosemary and your staff. You did a great job.
Well, thank you. And before you head to the airport, I want to absolutely thank all of the NQS staff, and especially the HIT team and some of the performance measure team as well, who are here actually helping us with all the logistics, because this is the first time we've experienced five breakouts across the building for a large team like this, and it seemed to go very smoothly from everything I saw. So I thank them as well.
That was great. Just one thing, and I think that our group, I was in the clinical analytics piece, but it's hard to get measures without measurability, and I think that, you know, do a great job, and I used ESPN as my reference because, you know, we like to look at statistics as humans. But when it helps improve care, we got to make sure that we have accurate reflection of what we're doing and give it to the people who need it. And we've had great success with behavior change in our providers by showing them not necessarily where they're weak, but where as a population we need to improve our care. So give me measurement capability with my measures, and hopefully we can make some change.
Okay. So let me just give you some of my own thoughts from what I've been hearing through the day and having had some very interesting experiences over the last three and a half years since I started here at NQF. We've been through a big process of trying to move in some ways too quickly. But if I look back on it, it was an R&D process to identify, to do research. If it were done just as research, there wouldn't be any pain in the room, and I understand that. But it wouldn't have gotten done. So what we learned was a lot of things. One thing I think we learned was measures specified for a platform in claims don't translate directly to measures looking for data that ought to be in electronic records. Electronic records weren't developed in that way. And some change needs to happen there. Change needs to happen on how we think about what we want to measure and how we capture data. And I heard in the between the rooms, because I wasn't in every room, and I know in our room, that it's not just the doctor and the nurse, and it's not just the EHR that contains the information you need. It's in healthcare, and it's somewhere, and that doesn't mean it's not available through measurement, but it's not a push button that I can say, here's my thumb drive, give me my results. And the results have to have meaning. So there's a lot of learning that we've had, and I think this is going to help us tremendously to pull this together. You're going to see a summarization of all these components. What we plan to do, now I believe we have some slides to lead to what our next steps will be. So what we plan to do is we will have another webinar in June. We believe it will be the 14th of June. We don't have an exact time yet. We will work with the planning committee with the summarization. We will come back to discuss what we've learned and get your input. We would like to, but I don't have a guarantee on whether how soon we can do this, have a site where you can not only, you will see all the presentations, but be able to also make comments and continue to participate. We will also have another face-to-face meeting where we will continue this kind of discussion, and we look for your comments about the best way to do this. It's possible that our 5 breakouts were helpful today because we got groups together with like interests, but I did hear from many of you, I wanted to go to all of them. I wanted to go to 3 of them. And so we may actually look for another way to consolidate a bit so we can get even more input. So we're looking at ways to make this continue, to continue to give you value, and we look for your feedback about how to help it continue to have value. There have been some discussions about can we use social networking to make this a bigger thing. We're interested in your interest in that and what you would like to do, so that we can explore how to expand this beyond our August meeting and a report that will come out from that. So I look for your input. I thank you all for great presentations and great discussions today. I think we have a comment. We should have a published hashtag for this. Okay. Good feedback. I can't guarantee anything today. We're not taking up a collection either. But seriously, we are looking for that kind of feedback if you think there's value in this. I found one thing that really surprised me. I got a new iPhone, and I figured, all right, I'll take the Twitter app. I have 5 followers within 5 minutes, and I haven't posted anything. So I guess there's some interest. Maybe if I posted, I'd get more. Things do get out there. So I definitely want to thank, I won't go through all the names on the list, but our planning group members, here are all their names with their respective organizations. It's been really an exciting effort to work with all of these people and to get all this feedback. They've worked really hard, and we spend a lot of time, as has our staff, to kind of pull this together. So Again, we thank you all. We look for your continued support and input. And even on the technical side, we look for making it easier, quicker, and less complex. So we'll end a little early then, and thank you all.
And that does conclude today's call. Thank you for your participation. Have a good day.